Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Oh, we're back.
Were we gone?
I don't know. We were gone from this podcast feed.
I guess that's true.
If you disappear from the podcast feed, you disappear from the world.
Oh, man. That's like sensory deprivation.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I've been doing a lot of podcasting today. I'm going away for the weekend. There's a lot of extra work to be done in advance for that. And I also have the summer coming up where I've got a bunch of stuff going on where I have to record things in advance. So I recorded a podcast for a couple hours this morning that nobody's going to hear until July, but you know, whatever.
Wow. That is some serious pre-recording.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot going on, right? With WWDC coming up and then various summer events that are not of an Apple related nature. I mean, technically, but that means I got to pre-record a lot of podcasts for the summer, and I'm doing that for The Incomparable too. I had to schedule a bunch of episodes, as you saw, because I was counting out like how many episodes do I need when I throw in like 3 weeks where I'm not able to record anything, and I realized I was a couple short, and so I scheduled a couple more, so I've got like enough episodes to cover me, so that when I get back from my summer vacation. I think it'll be at zero where I'll be able to get back from my summer vacation and do a recording that week. Will be that week's episode. So I'm putting it right on the edge there, but that has required a lot of pre-planning because, you know, it's like mid-May now. I don't know how that happened, but here we are.
Yeah, I know. We were talking last night. We're like, hey, wait, is next weekend Memorial Day? Jeez, when did that happen? I feel like it's one of those situations though where it's like there will be a lot going on, but right now, like I'm not prepping a variety of stuff because I don't have a lengthy vacation planned for the summer. So for me, I'm sitting around thinking like, oh man, it's really quiet.
Yeah, almost too quiet.
Not a lot is happening.
No, I guess Apple's doubling down on secrecy is really working now because I really expected that we would get some details about whatever is happening at WWDC, and
we're still a couple weeks away, so you never know. I mean, lately these things sometimes like come out like even a couple days before, right? You know, so it's hard to say. But yeah, I guess it's working for them. So it makes our jobs a little more boring because there's not a lot of stuff to write about necessarily.
Correct.
It's always fun when I go to my blog, like the Apple blogs that I read and I refresh. I'm like, man, this story has been on the top of the page for like 6 hours. That's a long time. I guess there's not much happening. But yeah, I guess it's, take the slow with the fast.
Yeah. It happens. It comes in waves. And that's fine. I mean, part of it, too, I think, is mentally preparing for June. Because, right, that's going to be, that's always incredibly busy. And that week is going to be the first week in June. It's going to be super busy and full of stuff that will also propel us through the summer because, of course, the OS betas generally drop that week, the first developer betas, and we begin that kick toward the release in the fall. And that is you know, then there's a little bit more of ignition in what's going on in the Apple world once that happens. But we're in a lull now.
It will be interesting to see how that plays out this year, too, because there has been some expectation setting in the last few months that perhaps these updates, or at least the iOS update, might not be as major as some previous ones. Whether or not that pans out, I mean, or how much that means is still an open question, but it seems as though maybe they've sort of slowed their breakneck pace, perhaps, in terms of like new features and stuff like that. Granted, that might doesn't mean there won't be plenty of other things to write about, but yeah, I'm curious to see what these year's releases look like and whether this is Apple changing any sort of direction or whether it's just rumor and hearsay.
Yeah. I mean, because it's not, I don't think it's leaks from Apple setting that expectations. It's just Bloomberg leaks setting our expectations. We don't really know. Apple may be taking a very different tack on iOS updates and macOS updates, or it may be that it's exactly what they're reporting. And they could be going full speed. They could be slacking off a little bit just in order to improve other things. It also means that they may not change their pitch at all. Like Bloomberg said, like they were going to redo the springboard. They're going to redo the home screens, and they decided to push that back a year. And if they don't announce that at WWDC, then, you know, that isn't necessarily confirmation of anything because we don't really know.
Yeah. The evidence of absence, et cetera,
et cetera. Et cetera. Yeah. So that's a good one.
Thanks. Thanks.
Came up with that yourself, did you?
Oh, yeah. Totally me. Totally me. Mm-hmm. Never mind that Thomas Aquinas guy or whoever it was.
Good. Or whoever. Good job, Dan.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. So, I mean, on the tech side, it does seem things are quiet. I mean, but in addition to WWDC, we do have, I mean, there are other things that happen. I'm just thinking like E3 comes around, and I think later in June. You know, so there'll be some. We did have Build and I/O already, and in some ways, I feel like neither of those were as big as maybe they've been in the past.
No,
and I mean, you know, some of that is we're not steeped in that world as much as we are in Apple, so we don't. I think generally the impact on us is lower, but it did seem particularly quiet this year around those events. Like there were a couple announcements here and there, and of course, we spent a long time talking about Google Duplex, but. You know, beyond that, there wasn't a lot of stuff that seemed like, here's a thing right now that's new.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, you do clockwise and I do download, and it's the same thing, right? Where we're looking at the news of the week, and it's like, there's not. I mean, we can all get mad about Google Duplex, and we can all ponder like Microsoft's giant wall tablets their low cost rumored surfaces and all of that, but it does seem like it's quiet. And you know, maybe it is. I mean, maybe those stories are true that everybody is kind of retrenching and focusing on stability and security and stuff like that, and working on their next generation platforms that they're, you know, still working on and therefore can't release. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I have very few expectations for WWDC this year. I mean they will move the platforms forward. I think that's always interesting to see how they move in lockstep, how they move differently. Like, what's a watchOS? What's the Banner watchOS feature? What's the Banner iOS feature? Is the Mac catching up to things in previous iOSs, or is it just kind of continuing to slide in a different direction? We, you know, I don't know. There are lots of things they could do, but there's only a finite number of things that they want to do, and then a subset of that they can ship or at least announce with confidence that will be in the betas and the final releases in the fall. And then keep in mind, there are also some features Apple announced last year that still haven't made it into devices. Right. So
And there's a lot of, I mean, iOS 11.4 is still hanging out there in beta and with a diminishing window for when it might ship, assuming it does ship before WWDC, which is not a guarantee, but would generally be the case, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to, because the idea is that, you know, most people are going to be using the iOS 11 until the fall. Right. And so, you know, if they've got bug fixes or things like that, they'll do it. But certainly, you know, the development-wise, it's, you know, increasingly difficult for Apple because they're, you know, they're building and going to start publicly releasing iOS 12 betas, right? So they want to get off of 11 if they can, as much as they can. But everybody else is still using 11, so they got to kind of keep it going a little bit.
I do wonder what happens with those features that haven't been shipped since you know, specifically AirPlay and Messages in the Cloud being the two big ones that have kind of been in and out of the betas of iOS 11 over the past several months.
You gotta think that AirPlay 2, at very least, is going to ship at or before WWDC. You gotta think, but maybe not. I don't know.
It depends how hard a time they're having with it. I mean, the indications have been that it's been a trickier proposition than I think they initially expected. Hence the, you know, it goes in the betas, it gets tested, it comes out of the betas when they get released. That's surprising to me. Given that it didn't, you know, certainly the stuff that's in there is tricky, but that technology exists among competitors as well, I think, which is what makes it a little perplexing at times, right? Like Sonos has been doing this kind of thing for a long time. Therefore, it would seem like it is a solved problem, but you never know what kind of secret sauce that Sonos is using that Apple, you know, can't easily duplicate. And messages in the cloud is just one of those things where I feel like they started pulling a thread in there and it unraveled a lot of stuff because messages has had some reliability problems over the year, especially when it comes to dealing with multiple devices. And on paper, this idea that all your messages will be stored in the cloud seems like a great idea to just sort of, you know, re-architect that and solve all those problems. But clearly it has proved a bigger challenge because even, you know, I've heard from people who are on the betas who, you know, there's varying levels as there always are. Like people, some people are like, oh, it works great for me. I haven't had any problems. And some people are like, this is a mess. Like I've had all these issues. So yeah, I think those were two very ambitious things that didn't necessarily seem ambitious at the time, but have proved to be harder than expected.
Yeah, I think with AirPlay 2, it's just kind of a feature that isn't there. With messages in the cloud, I get that one. I really get from a do no harm perspective, which is like, you know, the last thing you want to do is flip on this thing at scale and cloud up, you know, suck in everybody's messages on all their devices and have it be broken. Like that could be catastrophic. You lose huge amounts of data and all that. So I get, I actually kind of like it. I mean, the challenge is that it's been so long now, but I like the fact that they've been turning it on and off in the sense that it seems like what they're really trying to do is get it working at these increasingly larger groups with increased reliability and liability. Sure. Let's say that too. Well, yeah, so that when they flip it on for everyone, It
doesn't explode.
It doesn't explode, right? And obviously, they've tried it and been like, oh, geez, you're right. Like, they pull a thread and they're like, oh, this is an issue. I also wonder sometimes if there's, if some of this is about getting the security architecture right, because, you know, now you're, the way Apple's messaging system works, like, every device has a key and it's encrypted and passed to get to that device. And I wonder if this is an aspect of it too, where they're trying to figure out, you know, the most secure ways to get that stuff to sync and where it syncs from and all of that. But it also shows that this is Apple struggling with a thing that we knew that they were struggling with, which is iMessage across devices is inconsistent. And and that means that that's a bug that they've had a hard time with for a while now. And now here they are trying to put it all together in the cloud. Is it any wonder that they're still struggling with that? Because they've been struggling with that for years.
Right, yeah. And I think they probably figured this was like a way to start fresh and really solve that problem from the ground up. But that's hard. That's a hard problem. I'm totally with you. The AirPlay thing is somewhat more perplexing because, as you said, it's just a feature. And if it, you know, breaks or goes wrong, people will be annoyed, but it won't be, there shouldn't be any data loss or anything at stake there. But, I mean, it's interesting, too, because that was one of the prime selling points of the HomePod, you know, major bullet point for it. And I'm, you know, we're what, 3 months? 3 months and change into the HomePod's lifespan. And it seems like there were some estimates this week about sales, but it's one of those things where, you know, we don't know exactly how well it did. Apple will say it's doing well no matter what, almost. But yeah, I got to wonder if there's more to the HomePod story to come as well, because if it's been, you know, I think most people have found it a little underwhelming. It's not that it's bad at what it does, it's that it doesn't do very much.
Yeah, and what's going to be the story there, right? Are they going to announce new things for it to do? Is there going to be a Siri? I said this last year, I want there to be kind of a Siri section. We were hoping Siri's coming out party would be last WWDC, and it didn't happen. Like, talk about Siri and how it's in all these different places and how there are all these ways that it's going to get better and they're all going to interact with each other and all of that stuff. And it didn't happen, so maybe this time. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that Apple tends to be pretty good at keeping under wraps. So it's the kind of thing that might legitimately still be a surprise when it rolls around.
Yeah. Well, it's what, 2 weeks, something like that. It's getting close now.
Two and change, I think.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, that'll be good. Good stuff for everybody involved. It'll be exciting. It's always exciting. There's always stuff to talk about. I like
there's
that
always
about
something
them.
At least. They're never going to hold their show and be like, "Yeah, we got nothing for you this year."
Anything else going on?
Geez, I don't know. I guess
mean, else implies that nothing going on was one of the things that was going on. I guess you got me there.
You know, I'm only it's the end of the TV season. Really, that's what's occupying me these days.
I see.
Got all those season finales happening.
Yeah.
Shows getting canceled, shows getting saved. It's really it's a dramatic time to be alive.
What a time
to be alive.
It's
like you and I were talking a little bit about The Expanse in Slack earlier.
Right.
Which is currently a bit of a drama point because the show got canceled and people are pushing very, very hard for it to get picked up again.
Right.
And there's not been any news as far as I know on that other than places sort of nominally turning it down. But it's interesting. It's always interesting when people, you know, when shows get canceled, because invariably there are pockets of people who are like, "Oh my God, how can you cancel this show?" Like, and they'll get, you know, big campaigns and stuff. And over the years, those have worked a few times, but I always wonder how much, you know, how often networks cancel shows just to see if anybody's still paying attention.
Yeah, I do wonder about that. Like, if we cancel this and there isn't a big uproar, then we can just get away with it. But if they cause trouble, then we'll renew it. Like, it's on the bubble. Let's cancel it and see what happens, and then we'll bring it back. Yeah, I don't know. My favorite cancellation story of the last few years is that show Timeless that got canceled at NBC, and then like week later, NBC was like, "No, actually, we do want that." They uncanceled it. That is bizarre.
It was super weird. I have to say, season two of that show was really good.
Interesting.
It was really solid. And ended on a cliffhanger that I was like, well, now I hope they have a season three. So we'll see if they manage to pull that one out of the fire again. It seems like every year these days, like, there is something that gets saved or uncanceled or something.
Well,
you know, as
there's
Brooklyn
so many,
Nine-Nine this year happened.
Yeah, there's so many more destinations for shows than there used to be. And also a lot of the cancellations, the hardest cancellations, the ones that are the most surprising, tend to be the ones that are the show that gets canceled in part because of ratings, but in part because it's not part of the company that's broadcasting it. It's not an
business.
Owned thing. It's a business decision, right? So Brooklyn Nine-Nine is owned by Comcast, NBC, Universal, and broadcast on Fox. So, you know, when you get the more head scratching cancellations, it's usually that, because if you own the whole show, it's a lot easier to keep it on your schedule because it benefits the company. But if you don't own it, then it's really easy to cancel it. So then you've got somebody, and the Sci-Fi Channel and The Expanse, it's the same way. Like,
yeah.
NBC Universal is the Sci-Fi Channel, and Expanse is owned by this company, Alcon Entertainment. And so it's not owned and operated kind of product. So they're like, yeah, it's not as big a deal for them to cancel it. And what you end up with is a motivated seller, where you've got, in the case of NBC and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, like NBC Universal, it's their show. They want to keep making it. And that for syndication and putting it on streaming later and all of those reasons. Plus, so in the end, they are going to air it themselves on their own show, on their own air. And with The Expanse, it's that mystery now where you've got Alcon. And they're going to shop it around and see if they can find a home for it. And, you know, it's unclear whether they will or not. But they said, like, at the time that it was canceled, that they were going to actively shop the show to see if they could find a home for it because they believed in it. And that's the truth about TV today that wasn't true when there was three networks or four networks, which is there's so many different outlets. And because everything is integrated, everything is vertically integrated, where the network and the studio are owned by the same company. If you're somebody who has a show that is an orphan, you know, you take it around and you shop it to other places and see, because there may be a place that Alcon can sell Expanse to, whether it's Netflix or Amazon or Hulu or somewhere we aren't even thinking of. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, too, because I think it took, you know, sitting outside of this, as most of us just are television consumers, I always remember being perplexed when I was younger that you would watch a show on one network, right? And then at the end, you get the little bug for the studio, right? The logos at the end. And you'd be like, wait a second, you know, this show I'm watching on NBC, but it's got an ABC thing at the end, right? Because you're so trained to associate that with the network rather than with the studio, that it is weird that you can have a show produced, you know, produced by NBC Studio, but aired on Fox seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, NBC makes Brooklyn Nine-Nine and it's broadcast on Fox. But a lot of times what ends up happening, what happened with Brooklyn Nine-Nine is NBC passed on it. They made the pilot and they made it for NBC and NBC said, we don't want it. And Fox said, we'll take it. We want it. And then it was a Fox show. And that was weird. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt was made for NBC. For NBC. And then NBC's like, we don't really want this. And they resold it to Netflix where it lived for the rest of its life.
Years ago, it was when Scrubs got canceled off NBC and then had a last season, I think, on ABC.
On ABC, yeah.
Yeah, because it was their, again, it was their show. Just bizarre.
Right. The one that I like is Star Trek. Original Star Trek was an NBC show, and it was produced by Desilu, which was then bought by Paramount. Paramount then was bought by Viacom and merged with CBS, and there's a whole thing happening now where they're trying
because they got unmerged again.
And now they want to merge them again, and CBS's board of directors is saying we don't want to be part with Viacom because Viacom is a bad business to be in and we are a good business. And the woman who controls both companies theoretically, who's Sumner Redstone's daughter, Sherry, is saying like, no, I want all my media companies together again. And they're saying, you know, legally, as the board of directors of CBS, we need to say this is a bad deal for the rest of the investors. And it's weird because she controls the company, even though she only has like 15% of the ownership of the stock because of the preferred stock thing that gives her control. It's a whole weird story. Anyway, the point is, though, that in the end, CBS ended up with the rights to Star Trek. So it's an NBC show that's got a CBS logo at the end of it when you watch an old original series episode, which is just so weird. But that's how it happens.
Yeah, and I mean, I was talking to you a couple weeks ago. I was on my way back from LA. I was watching on the plane. Where were we flying? I think we were flying United. United or American. I can't remember. Either way, they had in their seatback entertainment on the way out. They had made some deal with Marvel, so they had a ton of the Marvel movies available for watching for free. And so at one point I got bored, and so I started watching Iron Man 2. And it was that weird moment where at the beginning, you know, I've seen 20 Marvel movies, and at the beginning the Paramount stars fly in, and I had that moment of like, what?
Yeah.
How is this I forgot that was a long time ago, wasn't it? Right, like, because we're so used to the way the formula works now, having seen so many Marvel movies.
Well,
right
now
they have them down to
Marvel
a science.
They're at studios,
right?
But originally, before the Disney and before the success, they had major studios release those movies. So Paramount released Iron Man.
Yeah,
it's so weird now.
I know, and it seems weird going back and watching it and being like, oh, this is not how like it's recognizably as being like the same cut from the same cloth, but at the same time, like, it's a different world back then.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
It's like how the kids in 20 years will be like, what is with this weird fanfare at the beginning of the Star Wars movies? Like those old Star Wars movies with the drum roll at the beginning.
20th Century Fox, what's that? Yeah, well, it's a subsidiary of Disney now. So, really weird.
The corporate dramas, corporate family. If Shakespeare were working today, mm-hmm. you'd have all these dramas set in corporate boardrooms.
No doubt. I think there have been stagings of Shakespeare plays that are, they restage it and they make it, like people in business suits and with folders and things.
It's very dramatic. Is that a tabbed file folder I see before me?
Yeah, I was going to say, alas, poor Yorick's security badge.
Yeah.
I knew him well, Horatio, a fellow of infinite jest in the mailroom. Something like that.
We found our next radio drama.
That's from my one-man show, Jason Snell's The Office by William Shakespeare.
I think it's got legs. Yeah. We'll see if NBC will pick it up. If not, we'll go to Fox.
It has legs. It may not have all its toes, unfortunately. Frostbite. Anyway, anything else? I feel like we are done for the day.
It's... what I got.
Yeah.
That's what I got for
you. I'm with you. Well, we thank everybody out there for, of course, supporting Six Colors and listening to us. And we didn't talk about writing this time. That's fine. We had a great writing podcast last week. So
yeah, go look that
one. The Writer's Digest podcast with Jason and Dan. But we'll be back next week to talk about whatever's not happening next week. And then things get really interesting. But until then, we thank you and we say goodbye. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.